It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. Today, Alan Turing. If you used a computer, a tablet, or a smartphone today, well, there's one man you should thank. British mathematician Alan Turing. He was one of the most original thinkers of the 20th century. His theories laid the foundation for artificial intelligence and the modern computer, and he also helped save the world from Nazi domination by cracking the German Enigma code. And now, 60 years after his death, he's being celebrated on screen in a new biopic called The Imitation Game.
All right, Mr. Turing, I'll bite. Why do you wish to work for His Majesty's government?
I like solving problems, Commander. And Enigma is the most difficult problem in the world.
No, Enigma isn't difficult, it's impossible.
Good. Let me try, and we'll know for sure, won't we?
But there's a tragic side to Alan Turing's extraordinary life. He was also persecuted for his homosexuality by British authorities. And for that story, we turn to filmmaker Patrick Salmon. His film Codebreaker explores Turing's suicide after his arrest in 1952. Salmon says Turing was a victim of the paranoia and prejudice of the time.
One of the absurd things about the way Turing was treated is that there was this Cold War paranoia at this time in the early 50s about the risk that so-called perverts would have in terms of being a threat to blackmail, and they wouldn't keep their secrets.
So what did you say to the police?
I told them I'd been having an affair with Arnold Murray and that he'd given my address to a young man who was known to burgle men he'd met for sex.
And you told the police that you had sex with Murray?
They asked me what we got up to.
I was just wondering, why would you say that to the police?
Can you tell the story of what happened that led to Alan Turing's arrest and the whole unraveling of his life?
Sure. In late 1951, Turing met a man on the street in Manchester, a man named Arnold Murray.
He looked hungry, so I bought him a meal. I gave him my address, and later he came to my home to see me. He spent the night. He was 19.
And they had a brief relationship over some number of weeks, or maybe a month or 6 weeks.
I think he stole from me a few pounds, but I couldn't be certain. I accused him. He became angry. I weakened. He spent the night again. This theme repeated itself throughout our acquaintance. And then one day I came home and found I'd been burgled.
And rather naively at this point, Turing goes to the police, and basically the police start asking questions. Turing explains the friendship he had with Murray, and they ask more questions, and in very short order, Turing confesses to the nature of the relationship with Arnold Murray. And so at that point, Turing's arrested.
The sentence he was given was appalling. I mean, he was given a choice of prison or chemical castration, which is what he chose. What did that mean, chemical castration?
Turing was given a synthetic version of the female hormone estrogen. And what that would have done is it would have added that to his body, estrogen, but it also would have stopped the production of the male hormone, testosterone. As a result, Turing would have immediately become impotent. And he also would have lost his libido. He probably wouldn't have shaved anymore. The hair wouldn't have grown on his body. And also he would have, over time, started to grow breasts. Turing's mind would have been affected. He would have been more distracted and not as focused. And in fact, Turing alludes to this in a letter to a friend at one point during the treatment, not knowing why he's unfocused and distracted.
Chemical castration, they call it. Very civilized. I take it every day, and once a month, I get tested at the hospital to make sure I don't have any of that naughty testosterone in my blood. It's meant to cure me of my desires.
That sounds like a form of torture. I mean, what was the point? Was the idea at the time that these physical changes would be permanent, that he'd be, quote-unquote, cured of homosexuality?
Well, the interesting thing is that this treatment was seen at the time as the progressive way to deal with this quote, affliction. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people like Turing became guinea pigs, essentially, where these almost quack scientists, in hindsight, were testing their theories that somehow the changing the chemical makeup of someone's body and playing with their hormones could in some way get rid of this perversion. So it was seen almost as the compassionate way to deal with this situation, which simply couldn't be tolerated by society.
At what point do you think Turing began to think about suicide?
We know that in early 1954, Turing had a will made. And also, he had spoken with a friend on one occasion about considering suicide. So it's clearly something he was thinking about. There are some recent reports and theories that Turing may not have committed suicide, that it might have been an accident, and we don't think that there's any truth to that. The autopsy report indicates an amount of cyanide in his stomach that indicates that it was intentional rather than an accident.
And also the way he committed suicide, it's hard to imagine that being an accident, wasn't he? He was found with an apple that he had dipped in cyanide?
What probably happened based on our research is that he ingested the cyanide and then bit the apple to sort of make the taste a little more palatable. He was fascinated with the Snow White story and poisoning the apple, and so it's natural that he would have done this in that way.
I've seen Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs 7 times. That's 49 times I've seen a dwarf. Do you ever wonder what poison she soaks the apple in? They don't say in the film. She'd have her pick. Poisons appear everywhere in nature. Some of the most beautiful flowers contain the deadliest poisons. Oleander, rhododendron, narcissus. Do you know what their poison did to me? We all worked to break Hitler, because what did he do, amongst other things? He sterilized Jews. Jews like you. We fought that bastard, we defeated him. And when we were finished, what did they do to me? And I'm supposed to allow it?
I think he felt that his world was closing in on him. He sort of just reached a breaking point. I think he may have even seen it as a last act of defiance.
This year marks the centennial of Alan Turing's birth. It's been the occasion for a petition drive. Hundreds, thousands of people have signed a petition asking the British government to issue a posthumous pardon. What's happened with that?
Well, it's gotten bogged down in the House of Lords, and basically the concern was that this would create a precedent where you have to provide posthumous pardons for similarly treated people, because this is the important thing to keep in mind. Turing was not alone in the persecution he suffered because he was gay. There were thousands and maybe tens of thousands of men who suffered similar treatment in terms of being arrested.
Well, maybe they all deserve posthumous pardons.
So yes, they may all deserve posthumous pardons, but on the one hand, it doesn't change anything. I mean, the fact is this great injustice happened to Turing. And the government in 2009 recognized that with an apology to Turing and his family, a formal apology from the Prime Minister. Quite frankly, a better tribute, which I've heard another petition, is to get Turing on the £10 note. And that might be a better way to, again, remind the average person in England every time they open their wallet, aside from the iPhone they might have in one pocket, the £10 note might remind them of Turing. At the end of the day, it would be nice if they pardoned Turing, but it's still an injustice, it's still a tragedy, it's still a loss, and none of that will be repaired with a pardon.
Patrick Salmon is the executive producer of the 2011 docudrama Codebreaker about the life of Alan Turing. And as an update, last year Alan Turing was granted a posthumous royal pardon. He was only the fourth person to receive one since World War II.